Chairman, I would like to introduce Mr. Stephen Mayne.
Morning, Mr. Mayne.
Morning, Chairman. I'm wearing my hush puppies. I hope everyone else on the board wearing something from the company.
Indeed we are.
That's good. Just a couple of questions. I just want to tease through the doomsday scenario. All the headlines we're reading, global depression, you know, credit squeeze, all that sort of stuff. If it does get worse, how are we placed? And I guess a first question for you on that is, how have sales been in the last month? Like, have you seen a substantial fall away in sales and consumer sentiment in the last month? Harvey Norman's putting out figures on a monthly basis now. It was a bit vague today. Can you give us some more detail on the last month?
Well, what I can say, Stephen, is that, because we obviously track this every month, and there are seasonalities as you go through the year in our business. So it's better reflected if we talk about the year to date, which is not that old anyway. And we're trading slightly behind where we thought we would be from a budget point of view. But that budget had some growth in it. So when Sue reflected to you that we thought that we would be flat on the first half, I actually view that as quite positive because it's a hell of a lot tougher out there, you know, trying to sell our product. But I think more to the essence of your question that you're posing to us is that our products fit in many different types of environments. If you're not going to buy your plasma TV from Harvey Norman, you know, it might be that you might buy something for the holidays or for whatever purpose that are of a little lesser value. And that's actually where we fit in. We don't make TVs, but we make damn good running shoes, and we make really good branded products that people trust and they actually want. Our research suggests that even when people are trading down, if you will, that's what seems to be happening now, they still want to feel like they're getting value. And a lot of our brands, because of the longevity and quality that they've experienced, come to their attention, and that helps us. Now, I'd also have to say, let's not get too euphoric about that, because it's still pretty hard out there, and we have to work very hard to get our message out to first the retailers and then the consumers. The last thing you do in an environment like this is slow up your advertising, because it's really important, if you've got a good product, to actually get it in front of people. And one of the best ways to do that is through advertising. And as you've seen in our numbers, we spend a heck of a lot of money on advertising. And it's not a time to be saving money in that area. It's actually a time to be promoting it. So net message, so far so good for the half, but still pretty tough.
Now, a lot of people are talking about China and big slowdown in China, a lot of factories closing. Just as a preliminary first up, can you tell us what proportion of our goods are supplied from China versus what we might manufacture in Australia versus non-China, so we can get a better picture as to how China-dependent we are?
I don't have an exact number, but I have a number that will, I think, be responsive to your question. And that is about 70-75% comes from China. We've been there for the better part of 50 years, so we actually have a reasonable insight, even though China changes all the time, just like Australia does. We have a reasonable insight in how to deal with China and who are the suppliers that will actually work with us, whether times are good or bad for them and us. We have long-standing relationships with many of these suppliers. We have indeed reduced our suppliers over the last few years to try to make ourselves more relevant to the manufacturers that we do business with. And of course, the bigger companies are more likely going to stay in business than the small manufacturers that come along. So we're very mindful, and because we have a physical presence in China through our offices there, we actually stay pretty close touch with these manufacturers. And indeed, we're always looking for opportunities to make those relationships even stronger. So while you're exactly right to be concerned about that, we actually think that we're pretty proactive about it.
Now, a related question on that, Alan Kohler had an interesting column on Business Spectator this morning saying that global shipping is in crisis because banks won't give letters of credit to guarantee shipments. So can you tell us about any pressures that we're feeling in relation to our supplier terms? Are our Chinese suppliers requiring us to pay earlier, pay up front? And how is this shipping crisis issue working with us, with how we actually get our goods to Australia? Are we having to assume more financial risk because of this collapse of the letter of credit market for shipping?
Well, you've really got two questions there. One, going back to these long-standing relationships we have with our suppliers, we really see business as usual with our suppliers there, because we are long-standing customers and they're long-standing suppliers, and we have an excellent working relationship with them. So we don't feel any pressure there whatsoever. As far as the shipping is concerned, we are one of the largest inbound shippers in this country, and we have a shipping department who actually works with a freight forwarder in China that actually helps facilitate getting all those underpants on all those boats that have to come south. And we have seen no issues so far at all of any disruption from the issues you bring up.
How about any pressure at the Australian end with Australian retailers? People keep saying Wesfarmers have got $3 billion of debt expiring by December next year. We all know how brutal Woolies are in screwing all their suppliers. I presume they probably asked you to make Bonds a select brand by now. How much pressure are we feeling on the retailing side? Is Myer, with its big debt, private equity, are they pushing terms out? Is there any pressure coming through on the other side of the equation that we've seen so far?
Well, one of the indications of that would be debtor's days. And while it has shown a very small increase over the prior year, it's not worrisome whatsoever. We're actually very proactive in collecting our debts because we deal with thousands of small retailers, you know, throughout the country. The bigger risk is in the smaller retailer because, as you know, they just get squeezed on all sides. But we've actually seen no measurable increase in the debtor's days, even in the smaller end of our customer base. I think it gets back to because our brands are important to the retailers, because we go out of our way to make sure the consumers understand the value of those brands to themselves, that retailers are probably going to self-select into us more because they need us as much as we need them.
Now, just to ask a couple on the financials. You're a former finance director at Westpac. Our gross debt's about $850, which is probably a touch on the high side, given our market cap's now down to $900 million, although we claim in our balance sheet, we claim our equity's worth $1.33 billion. So the market is valuing us at $400 less than what we claim. What is the ratio that we are nearest to in terms of our debt covenants? So is there a market cap clause in there? Cash flow, you know, which is the one that's out there, or a couple that we are closest to that could trigger us to have to repay our $850 million of debt earlier than 2010, which is, I think, the current earliest repayment?
Right. Well, gearing and interest cover are obviously the two covenants that are prevalent in all of our debt arrangements. We have very few covenants beyond that. Those two, so we manage those quite carefully. I think the best way to respond to your question, and if I don't, come back and tell me, is that we've actually reduced our debt down below pre-ACT levels. As you know, we pay cash. We don't use scrip for our acquisition so far. We may in the future, but we don't know. So for us to really generate the sort of cash that we had, especially this last year, to not only reduce the debt but pay a very, very substantial dividend as well, is tribute to the fact that we focus very heavily upon not only the shareholder but the banks. The banks don't ask us to pay this down. We actually oftentimes pay ahead of what we're required to pay down because, like you, we believe that it's important to have a very strong balance sheet. Just in responding to your market cap versus our debt levels, I'm actually not sure that the two relate to each other unless you're going out of business. And we're not inclined to do that anytime soon.
Just a couple more. One on you, Chairman. I think your career can be characterized as somewhat of a troubleshooter, that you went onto the AMP board when it was in crisis. I'm just wondering, like, what sort of a masochist are you in agreeing to go onto the Babcock and Brown board? You've talked about the great governance at Pac Brands. I mean, you won't find a worse governed company or dysfunctional family of companies than a Babcock and Brown. And I was amazed at the ASX annual meeting where Michael Sharp, one of their directors, said that he had to retire from the Babcock and Brown board because it was so stressful, but he was able to keep going as the director of the ASX. So clearly you've bought yourself a pile of time commitments and stress. How are you managing your time commitments having taken on that gig? And given your career where you like being a sort of a short-term person, are you committed to Pac Brands for the long term? Because I can't imagine that if you stepped up to be the Babcock chairman, which a lot of people think you should do, that you'd have the time to continue serving this board as well as you have so far.
Well, I'm not inclined to comment anything about the Babcock and Brown situation other than it's released to me. So I don't think anybody here is going to learn much about Babcock and Brown today. Stephen, just a little bit of history about myself. I spent a lot more time working in good companies than I have in companies that perhaps need a little bit of help. So I think actually my career is a little more broad-based than you would allude to. And I think the relevant part of your question is, how do I spend my time? I do not take on responsibilities unless I think I have the time to devote to them. With all due respect, I'm a bit younger than Michael. And I think he probably had his hands full with the ASX and Babcock and Brown, as well as personal issues in the end of his own health. So I manage it. I don't take on responsibilities that I can't deal with. I take a very responsible attitude about what I do and what I contribute. And as far as this company is concerned, I'm available and will work as hard as I have worked as long as the company needs me.
Okay, just two more on general business and a couple later on the directors. Who are our big five banks? So if it does come down to some issue with our bankers, it's always nice to know who they are. I'm hoping that Westpac will be in the slate. And is it fair to say, with the benefit of hindsight, and I'm not criticising you for this, that if Yakka was for sale today, we'd get it for a lot less than $250 million? So given the fact that we do have all this goodwill on our balance sheet, that the market cap's currently $900 versus the claimed net equity of the business of $1.3, is it a fair comment to say that we might have paid a bit over the odds for Yakka, $250 million in cash, I think it was? Thank you.
The answer to your question is no, and we actually paid $280.
$280, right.
Okay.
All right.
You might have to also take into account the fact that we've enjoyed a year's worth of earnings from this company at the same time. We also acquired it when the debt was much less expensive than it is today. We bought that in an uncontested environment where there was no auction going on because of a long-standing relationship that our former chief executive had with the owner of that company. It was not a competitive bid process whatsoever. So I'm not convinced at all we would have got that company for less, much less, have had the opportunity to enjoy the fruits of those labors during the past year. So I don't subscribe to your theory at all.
And
that's said from a finance officer's point of view.
Okay, and our big five, who are our major bankers? And also, are we getting the benefits of lower interest rates? Like, if the Reserve does another 100 basis point next in a couple of weeks, does that flow straight through to us under our syndicate, or are we locked into some sort of international benchmark?
Well, you might ask Gil Kelly and others if they're going to lower our rate. But it's the four major banks, which HSBC. right. Our major banks. They have been our major banks since we floated. We have a, he's in the room, so he'll ask me for a raise after this. But we've done a superb job of managing those relationships with those banks. We roll part of our debt every year so that we don't have debt that is in the current category for very long. And we have had no, we rolled a big chunk of that debt this, earlier this year, quite successfully with no dramas whatsoever on better terms than we had in the prior period.
And have they passed on the last rate cut?
Greg, have they passed it on?
As it rolls through the book, that's right.
Right, because it's floating rate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We hedge part of that, okay, just like we hedge part of our currency, but to the extent that it's not hedged, yes.
Okay, thank you.